What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Plant the Spear Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse, and thanks for tuning in. We're going to start this episode off by saying Happy New Year to everybody out there in Knoll Nation. It is officially 2023, and this is our first episode of the new year, so I'm excited for what 2023 is going to be for Florida State, for Plant the Spear, for all of us out here in Knoll Nation. I know it's going to be a special year. I know there are some big things coming for Florida State that I'm excited about. I'm ready. You know, you never want to wish your life away, but I am ready for that LSU game in September. I know that's going to be a top 10, top 15 matchup with some high stakes, and it's going to be a huge environment. So I am really excited for that one, as I know you are too. But there's a lot to cover in the meantime, and Florida State did end 2022 on a high note, getting the bowl win over Oklahoma and also getting some pieces in the portal, some crucial pieces. But we do have a lot of ground to cover. Like I said, we got the bowl game to talk about, which we won't spend a ton of time on just because I know it's been covered a lot, but I haven't got to talk to you guys about it. We got some roster moves and some coaching changes to cover as well. And like, if you listen to this podcast on a regular, you know part of the reason I didn't get to record after the game was I had won the VIP little package or whatever to the Duke's Mayo Bowl. And part of that included field passes for pregame, so we had to be there early. So I called it a night pretty early, but it was fun. It was a cool experience. We got to be down on the field before the game. We were, you know, right there on the sideline. And that was something I had never done before, so it was pretty neat. And to be honest, the tickets were pretty sweet too. There were 11 rows from the field, right around the 40-yard line, so it was fun. It's just at times it's hard to get into a game that you don't really have any skin in the game. You're not excited or a fan of either team. And the funny thing is, when we got there, we ended up being on the NC State side. And I personally have no love lost for that program. I've never been a fan of NC State. For certain reasons, I've heard of how their fans behave in Raleigh and things like that. But anyway, so when we got there, everybody was like, well, how's a Florida State fan end up at this game? And I explained to them that I had won the package and all that stuff. And then they were like, well, you're cheering for us, right? You know, hey, ACC, huh? And I'm like, well, no, because I don't do that. I've never been someone to cheer for the conference. You know, Miami, Clemson, NC State, all them being good doesn't do anything for Florida State. So I don't care about them being good. I don't want them to win. I understand strength of schedule, conference strength, and all that stuff. I get it. That's part of it. But this isn't the SEC. We're not here for that. So I cheer for Florida State and Florida State alone. You know, if they handle their business, they win their games on the schedule, they're going to be in the conversation. It doesn't matter. So not cheering for NC State in that one. And not to mention the Maryland Terrapin mascot. I saw him on the sideline. I took a little picture with him, and he gave me a chop once he realized I was an FSU fan. So I had to pull for Maryland that day, and they did end up winning the game. So that's cool. But anyway, back to Florida State. So Florida State does end the season on a strong note with a win over Oklahoma. It didn't go the way I had planned. If you listen to the pregame preview, I thought the final score would be around 45-20. To be honest, I originally wanted to go a little more conservative than that. I wanted to go 38-24-ish, but I just felt like some of the crucial opt-outs that Oklahoma had was going to really put them behind. And I think one of the things that I underestimated in this game was the depth that Oklahoma has, the talented depth that Oklahoma has. And a lot of that has to do with them being a really good high-level program for a long time. You know, they've been able to recruit at a pretty high level. And despite what Lincoln Riley took with him to USC, there's still a lot of talented pieces left there. You know, a lot of their depth guys, a lot of the people we saw playing in that game from the reserve role could start at a lot of Power 5 programs across the country. So, you know, it's not like they were getting walk-ons when they stepped in. And I think I underestimated a little bit how quality those players were going to be, because that roster is still pretty loaded. And I do think they're going to be fine in a few years under Brent Venables. Now, one thing that I did talk about, though, in the preview was that I thought 6-6 was a little deceiving of a record for Oklahoma. I think that when you look at 9-3 versus 6-6, you would think the 9-3 team would probably roll over them. But one of the things that I cautioned was they played in a tough Big 12 conference this year. And from top to bottom, the Big 12 was pretty solid. And so that 6-6 record may have been a little deceiving, as was their defensive stats. You know, we know their defense ranked low 100s, you know, or whatever, towards the bottom in most categories. But I also, you know, told you guys that they played 7 top 50 offenses throughout the season. So those numbers may be a little smoke and mirrors. I also think I underestimated how good Dylan Gabriel was. And I think when you look at any team who has a very high level quarterback and receiver combination, as does Oklahoma with Gabriel and Marvin Mims Jr., I think that can keep them a team in any game. You know, that's something that I also, when my brother, who's a Georgia fan, he asked me, like, how do you think our game's going to go against Ohio State? And I said, well, you know, I would be concerned about what you saw at the end of the LSU game where your secondary got torched, and they do have Ohio State, that is, C.J. Stroud and Marvin Harrison Jr. That's a pretty elite wide receiver quarterback combo. And they were able to get, you know, they kept Ohio State in that game. And, I mean, one could also argue that if Marvin Harrison Jr. had not have been knocked out of that game, that, Ohio State could have won, because this is 2 years in a row that Georgia got fortunate that a guy they had no answer for covering got knocked out of the game early, and they won. But it just goes to show that that was something that Georgia, who has all the five stars in the world, struggled with. And Florida State struggled with it too. They didn't really have an answer for him. So it was, you know, they were fortunate. They caught a break when he got knocked out of that game. But like I said, guys, overall, I think all that matters at the end of the day, because Florida State had guys out too. You know, we didn't anticipate Fabian Lovett not being in that game. It was a surprise to me when he was in street clothes. I heard it was like a little bit of a cleanup surgery from some things that had been placed before. So nothing major to worry about there. Should be fine for next season. But he's a big loss for this defense. When he's not been on the field, that interior defensive line has struggled. And it was the same case in this game. But like I said, I think Oklahoma was a better opponent than maybe I had estimated. And I think they came into that game ready for a fight. And I think Florida State maybe a little bit thought that they were going to be able to beat them with the opt-outs and the 6-6 record and things like that. I think, you know, the offense got off to a little bit of a slow start, put the defense in some tough positions. But overall, they were able to rebound and get the win, which is all that really matters at the end of the day. So just looking at a few of the stats from this game, Florida State puts up 587 yards of total offense, 418 through the air, 169 on the ground, 8.15 yards per play, which is excellent. You know, I know sometimes it didn't look great, but once they got rolling, things worked out pretty well for the offense. You know, once they figured out what Oklahoma was going to try and stop, and they leaned on the pass, there was just they did really well. But at the same time, like I said, they went for over 400 yards passing, and this was Jordan Travis's first 400-yard game. So, you know, kudos to him there. He did have one that went for like 394, I think, previously this season, but this is the first one that's officially over 400. So big game from Jordan there, and it just really caps off a special season for him. You know, he ended up with 3,633 all-purpose yards and 32 total touchdowns on the season, 6th in QBR ranking. 3,000-yard passer, doubled his yards from 2021, touchdown to interception ratio and completion percentage improved on the year. And, you know, there was a thing preseason, I think it was around May, and I just tweeted this out. I went back in the archives to find it. And one of the college football accounts, they asked on there, who is a player that you would like to see go off for your team this year? And, you know, what does that mean? And I said, well, for me, it would be Jordan Travis, and I would like to see him have 3,500 yards, all-purpose yards, and around 35 touchdowns, which means he missed almost little to no time due to injury and would probably catapult Florida State into having a pretty good season. Well, daggone if that wasn't pretty freaking close to exactly what I was looking to get this season. But, you know, anyway, like I said, you also had Johnny Wilson, who went for over 200 yards receiving. And this is a guy who can absolutely take over a game, as we saw. Over 200 yards, high pointing some big catches, just absolutely disrespecting the OU DB there on one of the last big plays. So he's a guy that can take over a game, and he's a huge asset on this offense. He also dropped a touchdown, which is something that we saw from him throughout this year, was inconsistency in the drops. And so that's the thing. That's another reason why I think he's going to be back next year. But a huge game from Johnny Wilson. You also saw some big plays from Pokey Wilson, who's someone that has really come into his own this year. He really did make some big plays this year for Florida State. And he did announce today that he's going to go test the NFL waters through the draft. So I'm definitely wishing him the best of luck there, pursuing his dream of playing in the NFL, because I really do think he put himself on the map this year with some of the big catches he had against LSU and Miami and in this game as well. So that was nice to see from him. But, you know, and we're going to get to this later, but Trayshon Ward also had a big game. Obviously, we know he hit the portal, which is, you know, it's kind of sad. But because I'm a big fan of Trayshon. I like what he's been able to do in his story, but we're going to touch on that in a second. But, you know, that was another guy who had a big game here. Also, Markieston Douglas, man, he's really coming on as a quality tight end. And let me tell you, some of the things he did, like when he dived for a touchdown there, like a guy that big shouldn't be able to do some of the things he's able to do because he is massive. And so I'm excited to see what he's going to turn into next year. And that tight end room is really going to be loaded. You also had Darian Williamson emerge in this game a little bit. Now, he only had two catches, but they were for 23 yards, averaging 11.5 yards per catch. And if you remember correctly, he had an almost 98 yards, almost 100-yard game against Boston College, and then we didn't see him again the rest of the season due to injury. So there's just yet another player there to be excited about at the wide receiver position. But getting back to the game itself, looking at the defense, now I understand a lot of people here are trashing the defense, and they're going to talk about how bad they played in this game and things like that. But I do think when you look at the context of what you have to take into account of some of the positions they were put in, and that Oklahoma offense is legit. I mean, it's just, there's no way around it. They are a legit offense. Now, Florida State has to get better against those legit offenses because that's something we have also seen this season where they struggled a little bit when they played any offense that had a pulse, and that's something that they're going to have to step up again against next year. Now, when you talk about the defense, they did give up 496 total yards. The biggest concern to me was the 253 on the ground. But again, like we said, we know Fabian Lovett was not in that game. They only gave up 5.79 yards per play, which isn't terrible. Their season average is under 5 yards a play, so it's not terribly off from what they've given up. Now, when you look at the run defense, that, like I talked about, that was where my real concern is. So Oklahoma ran the ball 54 times for 253 yards. Florida State held them to 2 yards or less. These are stopped runs, which count as 2 yards or less. They held them on 37% of their runs to 2 yards or less. Opportunity runs, which are runs of 4 yards or more, Oklahoma had 4 yards or more on 56% of their runs. Now, to put that into perspective, Oklahoma held Florida State to 2 yards or less 53% of the time and allowed 4 yards or more only 41% of the time. So not a huge difference, but you know, they also had two starting tackles out. Their leading running back was out. And I know Fabian Lovett was missing, but this defense is going to have to get better against the run. That's just plain and simple. There's nothing else to it. Nothing else to say there, but they're just going to have to get better against the run because when you see 56% of their runs going for 4 yards or more, what's that tell you? They're winning at the line of scrimmage. They're getting to the next level before the runner gets tackled. And so that's somewhere where I think seeing, and this is something that I tweeted out during the game, the addition of Daryl Jackson, the addition of Fisk, the bringing Fabian Lovett back for another season, and hopefully he has better injury luck this time around, cannot be understated. And I think that's the thing that I appreciate the most about this coaching staff is they see a need and they address it. You know, they had a terrible offensive line for a long time. So what did they do? They went out and signed a bunch of freaking really good guys. They went to the portal and they got day one pieces that can come in and step in and play. And that's what they're doing now on the defensive side of the ball. You know, they built up the offense, taking a lot of wide receiver transfers, running backs, you know, offensive line, things like that we just mentioned. Now they got to stock the defense. And I think they realize they have some holes, and that's what they're addressing. So that is something that I'm excited about. I think they will be better at the run next year. You know, now we're still, of course, waiting for the decision on Jared Verse, but there's still some more additions I think they should make on the defensive line. But like I mentioned, when you look at the positions the defense was put in, four times Florida State gave them the ball basically at midfield between turnovers on downs, a 23-yard punt return that they gave up, things like that, interception. They gave Oklahoma the ball at midfield and four times, and they held them to only 14 points. So the thing is, Florida State's defense, sometimes it doesn't look pretty, but sometimes they're able to get crucial stops when they need to, and it doesn't always have to look pretty as long as it works and as long as you can win the game. You know, they got the big stop coming out after halftime, which they needed. They got, a back-to-back stops until Florida State threw a pick and it led to a touchdown. But, you know, they were able to keep Florida State in this game by getting some of those crucial stops, by holding them to field goals on occasion. And one of the biggest problems with Florida State this season is they haven't always played complementary football where the defense is good and the offense is good at the same time. A lot of times, the offense puts the defense in a tough position or vice versa. And so that's something that I'm looking for them to get better at next season. But like I said, this Oklahoma team was, I think, better than a lot of us gave them credit for. And I do think the defense was put in a lot of tough positions. So while they didn't play great, considering they didn't have Fabian Lovett, considering they lost multiple guys throughout the portion of the game, I think that it wasn't as bad as it looked either when you consider the crucial stops that they got and when they held them when they had to. So, like I said, overall, at the end of the day, they win, they get the 10th win, and that's all that really matters, guys. That's all that matters. Obviously, you know, most of these bowls have become exhibition games at this point because of people opting out and things like that. And this 10th win was big for Florida State because Oklahoma showed up ready to play. I mean, they weren't going to give them anything. And so for them to still rise up and be able to get the win is just huge because now they can carry that 10th win, that momentum, into next season. And, you know, when you look at the 10-win mark, the double-digit wins, it's not easy in college football to get to 10 wins by any means. And this was Florida State's 25th 10-win season in program history. When you look at some of the other teams from around the conference, as well as some of your rivals and some of the best teams in college football, this becomes evident at how successful Florida State has been in a relatively short amount of time. Florida State has only been playing football for probably about half of the time, a little less than half of the time that some of these other programs have been playing football. So Florida State has 25 10-win seasons since they started playing football in 1947. Now, I understand that a lot of the older, really older years, some of these seasons were not 10 games in duration, so it's hard to win 10 games when you don't play 10 games. But pretty much since Florida State has started, they played 10 games almost every year, with the exception of occasional, about 3 years or so. But anyway, over the same course of time, NC State has one 10-win season in 117 years of playing college football. Wake Forest has two 10-win seasons in 115 years. Clemson's been playing football for 121 years and has 19 10-win seasons. Miami has 15 in 86 years, Florida has 16 in 110 years, and Georgia has 27 in 119 years. If you move the sticks up to 1947 when Florida State started, the numbers don't change other than UGA comes down to 25. So that really speaks volume to how hard it is to get the double-digit wins. And so it's huge for Florida State. You know, this was their first one since 2016. They ended the season, you know, talking about momentum into next year, they ended the season with six consecutive wins. They haven't done that since 2013. Now, they did win five in a row in 2016, but as far as six in a row, it's been 2013. So the momentum that they were able to gain at the end of the season, you know, when you look at how they came into 2022 with, you know, they were 5-7 with the embarrassing loss to Florida to end the season. Now, fast forward to 2023, you hit that 10-win mark. You beat both of your in-state rivals. You won six games in a row, and you've also retained a lot of players on your roster. You had another successful year in the portal. This is just a lot of that momentum that I talk about that's carrying into 2023 that's going to set them up for a big year. And not only did you win 10 games, but you doubled your win total from last year. And I understand a lot of people want to say, like, okay, well, Norvell's not winning fast enough because of insert team here, like TCU or something like that, someone who's won quick. But at the same time, you all know my feelings about the COVID year. I don't really count it because it was such just an insane circumstances that they had to work under in their first year. And I understand everybody had to go through that, but this is their first year. But for every TCU, there's a Nebraska. There's, you know, you name it. There's a team out there that did not win over 4 or 5 years. But to double their win total after 2021, that's climbing pretty fast. And so I'm excited to see what they can build on, because when you look at what Florida State was able to do getting to 10 wins this season, a lot of that was built from the transfer portal. And a lot of these transfer portal players were your stars once again. You know, a lot of these guys were your ones that earned the All-ACC honors and things like that. And no disrespect to our players, because I love our players, each and every one of them. And I think they play above their star rankings, because frankly, I don't care about what their star ranking was. But technically, on paper, when you look at it, they were able to get to 10 wins with a lot of guys who were kind of broken toys at other programs. You know, Trey Benson was an injured running back at Oregon who Cristobal didn't take with him to Miami. Johnny Wilson, you know, he was kind of a guy who was really trying to search for his way at Arizona State, thought he didn't, you know, when he entered the portal, he said he wasn't even sure if anybody was going to take him. And you've also had to take guys from Lamar. You've taken guys from Northern Illinois. You know, Dylan Gibbons, who was a great player for you, was a backup at Notre Dame. And so now that you're getting a higher level of guys, like a starter from Auburn, a starter from Colorado, a dominant player from Western Michigan, even if it isn't at the Power 5 level, you're continuously raising that talent floor. And the success and the stability at Florida State is going to allow you to bring in those higher level guys. You know, when you're doing things like this, you got the number one defensive lineman in the portal, the number one cornerback in the portal, two of the top three tight ends in the portal. So, like, they are elevating that talent floor. And if they're able to win 10 games and absolutely dominate some conference opponents with these guys, you know, you look at what you're able to bring back next year, and that really makes you excited for what they'll be able to do once you add in those extra pieces. And like we talked about, this staff is really good at addressing needs on this roster, and now they're able to do that with even higher end pieces. So I do think next year, like I said, I think it's a big year for Florida State. I do think that their goals are going to change. You know, I don't think you're just trying to get to a bowl now. I think you're trying to win the ACC. I think you're trying to get 10 wins might be your floor now. I don't necessarily want to say national championship or bust because, you know, they won 5 games the year before. So that's a lot to ask for a team who's still technically like completing their rebuild. But I do think with the portal now, things have changed. You can fast track yourself to success, and that's what they're doing. And, you know, that's another thing that I'm just tired of hearing, this tired argument of the portal is not sustainable. We don't know that yet. It has not been around long enough for anyone to make a factual statement that it is not sustainable. I mean, when you look at guys like Jamie Robinson, when you look at guys like Fabian Lovett, Jordan Travis, you're getting multiple years, Dylan Gibbons, from quality plug-and-play starters that you're bringing in. And so I don't think that it's not sustainable. And the other thing I think people have to realize is Norvell and the staff used the portal to get Florida State out of the ditch, to get them back on the road to success. There's nothing saying that they're going to stay in, you know, portal-heavy recruiting forever. Once they have success and stability to sell, they may not need to lean on the portal as much. Because I understand you can argue that those players won't always be in the portal, but you don't know that. And if the pieces are there and you have success at landing them, why not? I mean, it's worked. It took this team from 3 wins to 10 wins. So why not take advantage of the portal while it's there and the quality pieces are in it? But to say it's not sustainable is pretty foolish. But anyway, so that was just a tangent I felt like going on there. But like I said, so when you look at the end of this year, with obviously the national championship game left to be played, Florida State finished 10th in total offense, 16th in total defense. They were 2nd in explosive plays on offense, and the number one team was Western Kentucky, who had one more game and one more play than them. So you would think if Florida State played another game, they would probably be number one in explosive plays as well. Explosive plays on defense allowed, they were tied for 12th with Alabama. So, I mean, you know, when you're 10-3, you're up there in the ranks with the Big 12 champion, with, you know, a lot of these teams that finished with the same record with Alabama and stuff. And you know, when you look at the beginning of the year, that's probably not where you thought you would have been, you know, or at least at the end of 2021, because I do hear a lot of people say that no one saw this year coming. And I think, you know, I'm going to grade myself on a future show coming up, but a lot of us thought this was possible. And I do think next year, like I said, I'm not going to say it's national championship or bust, but your goals are a lot higher. And I do think Florida State, you know, should be a favorite for the ACC, because we do see some things from some other programs in the conference. You know, Clemson really looks like they have some cracks in the foundation. They did not look good in that bowl game against Tennessee, especially considering who Tennessee was missing. And I understand you could say that Cade Klubnik is a freshman, but he has played for them. That was not his first start. And they just didn't look good, and Tennessee doesn't have a good defense. So I do think Florida State is in a position now where, you know, Norvell knows this. You have a chance in 2023 to take back this conference, to win that conference championship, and to get to 10 wins, and to get to a New Year's Six bowl game, and potentially make the playoffs, which to me is a very successful season. You know, I'm not going to say that this team is, if they don't win a national championship, it's a disappointment. But I do think the goals that are on the table is to win the conference and finish with a minimum of 10 wins in the regular season, and also make a good New Year's Six, make the Orange Bowl. And so I think they are putting themselves in a position to do that. I think they're still planning on building towards the future by getting some of the quality high school recruits that you've seen, and Hakeem Williams and a Blake Nicholson and a Lucas Simmons and Julian Armella and the guys, Rodney Hill, that they brought in. You know, those are all talented young guys. but you have a chance to supplant yourself to the front of the conversation in the ACC in 2023, because something I talked about in the middle of the season when Florida State went on their three-game losing streak was how I think one thing that makes this down period for Florida State kind of harder to stomach was it felt like the ACC, Atlantic in particular, was at the highest point of almost every program. I mean, this is the best Clemson has ever been. NC State, this is pretty much about the best they've ever been. And the same story goes for Wake Forest. And Florida State was the worst they've ever been. So it's kind of like it made it even more painful. And I think that's why it felt so bad too. But now you look at the things are kind of shifting. The tide is turning a little bit. You know, Florida State is back to winning 10 games. They ended up winning more than Wake Forest. They won more than NC State. You know, they won more than all those teams that were favored ahead of you in early in the year in the conference. And so now the tide's turning. They've lost their quarterbacks. Florida State's bringing theirs back. You know, so the it's shifting now. The powers seem to be shifting back towards Florida State. And I think that's one thing that people had to take into account was that was the best those programs have ever performed over the course of history. And now when you look at how things are playing out, you know, Wake Forest looks like they're going to probably have to do a little rebuilding next year. The same with NC State. There's no more, you know, Devin Leary. There's no more Sam Hartman. And Clemson has a lot of questions of their own to answer. So, like I said, guys, Florida State is still planning on building for the future, obviously. But they're putting themselves in a position through the portal right now to take the conference back. And like I said, in the recruiting episode I did, if you let Norvell walk into a high school recruit's living room with an ACC championship ring on his finger, you know, an Orange Bowl trophy and things like that, that's going to pay dividends going forward. So, you know, they are going to still continue to recruit high school players, obviously, but the portal, there's no reason not to take advantage of it. It has not proven to not be sustainable or a recipe for success at any point in the short amount of time that it's been around. And so I say all that to show that the progress this team is making, they're taking giant steps now. You know, it's not baby steps anymore. They went from 3-5 up to 10 wins. They took a leap this year, and now they're also adding even higher end pieces. So, you know, now you look at how are they going to play. You know, my biggest question now is how are they going to perform with expectations on their backs, because they did struggle to beat some of the better teams this year. And I think that's actually one of my goals for next year, is to beat the better competition on your schedule. And I think that now that you're getting the pieces like a Fisk, like a Fentrell Cypress, and things like that, now you are going to be able to have a closer talent level to those other teams. So you should be able to do that. But like I said, it's just been a big step forward this year for Florida State. Now, to get to the news that we have to report, because like I said, there's been some roster moves and some coaching changes and things like that. First up, we'll start with Marcus Woodson, who was Florida State's secondary coach. He is now going to be the co-defensive coordinator and secondary coach at Arkansas. Now, hey, you know, co-defensive coordinator, that seems a bit lofty for what we saw at Florida State. But, you know, I wish him the best of luck there. You know, I don't think Woodson was bad. I don't think he was the greatest either. But you also have to remember, back when Norvell was kind of putting things together, it was at a school that was coming off, you know, just not a good period in time. They had just fired Willie Taggart after 2 years. There was not a lot of stability here. You had an interim athletic director. So as a coach, when you looked at this job, as really as anybody, as a human who's looking at a job, knowing that your future is not guaranteed, your future is not stable there, that it's kind of a tough sell. But when now you look where Florida State pays just about as well for their assistants as anybody in the country, they also are one of the more stable programs in the country now, and they have success to sell. You're going to have a lot higher caliber coaches that they can pull from to fill this position. And I'm not going to speculate on who I think they're going to get, because I have no clue, to be honest. There's a lot of names that are being thrown around, and I trust Norvell to get the best guy for the job. I just think the biggest thing here is to get someone who's a good coach, because we did see some shortcomings in the secondary this year. You know, the zone defense, if they ever decided to play it, wasn't that great. Guys didn't really get their head around on the ball a whole lot, things like that. But it wasn't terrible, because you didn't see, like, gone were the days of a receiver for the opposite team catching the ball, running into the end zone, and you never even see a Florida State defender in the TV frame at all. Like, that's gone. So I'm not going to say Woodson was terrible, but it certainly could be better. The other aspect is recruiting, and that was somewhere where we fell short from that position as well. And the DB coach is someone who really needs to be able to recruit, because a lot of times with DBs, it's just about having talented guys there. I mean, there's a lot of things that you can coach them and tell them, but a lot of it just is from getting talented players. And so I think this is somewhere where Norvell knows that they need some help in the recruiting department, because right now Alex Atkins seems to be the dog on the trail. But you need another one of those guys on defense. And so I think you just want to get a guy who has ties in the state to Florida, to Georgia, somewhere like that, that can recruit at a high level. That is your first and foremost. And then, you know, follow up the coaching with a quality coach as well. So we'll see who they can get. But like I said, the list of names should be a lot higher quality now, given the pay, the stability, and the success that Florida State has to offer. But that continues the mantra that I was talking about earlier, of where initially you were just trying to get yourself out of the ditch. But now that Florida State is in a much better position, you're taking better players. You can upgrade your coaching at certain spots. Now, I don't think they need to make a ton of changes. I don't, because you have found success in this coaching staff. And stability is something that is undersold to me, because we saw how much it affected Florida State in the past. And I understand that you see programs like Alabama have turnover all the time and things like that. But, you know, when you have NFL head coaches as analysts that you can just promote, it's not the same at Florida State. So I do think stability is key here. But there are some positions that needed to be upgraded, and this is one of them. And I think it was time for change, and I think it was a good move. But like I said, I think the staff has found a recipe for success, but now you're able to upgrade those things. You're able to upgrade your talent floor. You're able to upgrade some weaknesses on the coaching staff. And that's something that I think is going to obviously play well for Florida State going forward. That has been the only coaching move so far. And personally, I think that's probably the only one you're going to see this season. But now looking at the roster moves, because that's the other place where we have had some news break. Obviously, the biggest news of all is still Jared Verse, which we're still waiting to hear about that. I'm sure in true Plant the Spear podcast fashion, as soon as I say this or send this episode out, he's probably going to announce one way or the other. But so far, we do know that Jamie Robinson did declare for the NFL draft. And man, first, just like, I know Jamie probably doesn't listen to this, but man, thank you for your time in Garnet and Gold, because Jamie Robinson is a hell of a player. And like, if this was like Gladiator times in the bowl game, he went out on his shield. I mean, the way he played in Oklahoma, really in the Oklahoma game, really capped off the way his career went at FSU and just how he left it all out on the field. And I think you can't give him high enough praise for what he did here at Florida State and coming into a program that was really in need at the time. And you had a guy who came over from South Carolina, and he gave you two really quality seasons. Now, I can't say that Jamie Robinson is an elite safety, but he's a daggone good player. And he played 796 snaps of 904 total this year in 2022 with a PFF grade of 73.9. Last year, he played 755 out of 910 snaps with a PFF grade of 80.5. He led the team in tackles both seasons, and he had 99 total tackles this year in 2022. So again, like, you got multiple years out of a transfer who was a day one plug and play starter. So again, the transfer, that, you know, that's another checkbox, you know, in favor of the portal. But, you know, just want to give a shout out to Jamie Robinson, who is going to the NFL. You know, I would have loved to see him come back another year, but, you know, that's just selfishly because we want to see Florida State win. He's put enough on tape in college that he is what he is. He really doesn't have much left to prove. And so I think it's a time for him to make that jump. And like I said, I just wish him the best, and I thank him for his time as Garden and Gold, because he was a really fun player to watch, and he really carried this defense a lot of times. And it just left it out all out on the field. And I just love the aggressiveness and the chippiness that he played with. So with that being said, up next is Fabian Lovett, which we already talked about. He did announce his return. You know, I'm sure a lot of the injuries and lack of being able to put things on tape this year probably played a little bit into that. You know, he has played a few seasons now. Remember, he came from Mississippi State, but this is a player that where maybe NIL is more guaranteed and lucrative than NFL right now. Now, if he comes back next year and has another good year, he can obviously elevate that draft stock to where, you know, he may be making significant money. But the thing is, this was huge for Florida State to get him back, because when we were on the fence, and maybe he was one that you thought would go to the NFL because he does have the kid and the family situation that he needs to support, but you thought, okay, well, we got Fisk and we got Daryl Jackson. But if Lovett goes, you're going to need a little bit more. You're going to need some depth because you do have the younger defensive tackles that are quality players and are going to get better. But as we saw this year, without Fabian Lovett, you just got to have someone else there. And, you know, God forbid something happens next year with injury, you're thin already. And so now getting him back is going to be huge for, you know, not only depth, but for having another high-end guy on this defense. Because we saw when he played, it made a really big difference. You know, he only played 210 snaps this year because of injury, and he was your highest graded defensive lineman whenever you apply a little snap minimum there. But it just changes the outlook of the room. You know, now you have a guy like Fabian Lovett. You have a guy like Fisk. You have a guy like Daryl Jackson. You also have Malcolm Ray, Josh Farmer, Daniel Lyons, who are all young guys who got some experience and can contribute and look to be, you know, a pretty decent defensive tackle room next year. You also have Aobami Tafasi, who is a grown man for a freshman. Like, he posted a video the other day of some off-season workouts that he's doing. Guys, a freshman should not look like that. That's a freaking man. And so a grown man. So I'm excited to see what he can do as well. But like I said, it just changes the outlook of the room, even by the one player coming back. And so that's a huge get for next year. Like we said, if Verse announces he's going to come back, that would be kind of the cherry on top here. But I do still think they probably, you know, at a minimum, they're going to have to look for a defensive end in the portal. I wouldn't be mad if they took another defensive tackle just to, you know, just because we know Fabian has had some injury issues and stuff like that. But at the same time, they did host a South Carolina edge rusher, which, hey, we love some players from South Carolina, but they seem to work out, so hey, keep them coming. But, you know, they know that they need some more edge rushers, and so they are addressing it. And like we talked about, I mean, this staff has been very good at plugging holes where they need to with quality players. They also got word that Akeem Dent was coming back. Wasn't really a surprise there. I figured he would. The other name that we need to mention is Trayshawn Ward has entered the portal. Now, this one is a little sad. This one hurts the heart a little bit. I think mostly because, one, he was a good player, just point blank. I really liked what he was able to do in this offense. I think his skill set was utilized well. He was really one of your best backs at being able to make people miss in a phone booth. And so I do think it's a loss. There's no doubt about it. It's going to be a loss to lose this guy for next season because he was able to get going sometimes where other backs weren't. Like in the bowl game, you know, Trey Benson averaged under 2 yards a carry, and you know, he averaged over 8. Trayshawn Ward did. So it's going to be a loss, but this is a packed room, and we knew this was going to happen even before he announced. One of my topics that I was going to do in this episode, we're going to have to push the next one, was crowded rooms. And you knew you can't, I mean, there's only one ball to go around. And when you already have Trey Benson, Toa Fili, CJ Campbell, Rodney Hill, Keziah Holmes, you have all these guys who are also vying for playing time, and that room is crowded. And, you know, the same thing goes for the wide receiver room. You could see someone come out of there. Who knows? Hopefully not, but, you know, this was bound to happen. And I think it does hurt a little bit too because, you know, you saw him ascend from the walk-on ranks into a scholarship player and everything. So you got a little personal attachment there with Trayshawn Ward, and he's a great player, a great kid, and a great teammate. So you hate to see him go. But at the same time, this is really one of those, like, happy, sad, double-edged sword kind of transfers, you know, because this is something that happens when you finally build depth. You know, when you're not having to just take whoever you can get to have depth, that's a good thing. And I hate to see Trayshawn go, but again, this is what happens when you have a stacked room. Someone's going to have to eventually go. And that is something that is nice to see Florida State get back to, is that you have so many quality players at a position that a quality player is now leaving. And so I think it hurts, like, as a fan base, you know, it tugs at your heartstrings to see Trayshawn go. But at the same time, knowing that Florida State is finally getting back to having depth at a few different positions, that is something that you kind of got to take the good with the bad. You kind of have to accept that the portal is going to take from you too. But you're at least know that it's not like your best running back just left and you got no one to replace him. You know, you have a host of quality backs that are right behind him. And, you know, you have guys like Rodney Hill who have a similar skill set. And so maybe you go with the younger guy. I mean, you saw NIL deals for basically everybody except for Trayshawn Ward. And so maybe that was part of it, maybe not. I don't know the context there, so there's not much to say about that. But like I said, I mean, now that you're able to build that depth and you're going to lose guys on occasion, it's just going to happen. But I think the one thing that to talk about with that is when you look at guys coming in and guys going out and you look at what they've been able to lose and replace, and per the On3 rankings, so far, Florida State has brought in 9 players and transferred out 11. They brought in guys with an average ranking of 88.3. The transfers out have had an average ranking of 65.5. You lost 1 4-star transfer player and brought in 4. You lost 9 3-stars and brought in 5. So, you know, again, you're kind of swapping out guys to elevate the floor of your talent level. And that, to me, is, you know, that's where you get back to now 10-win seasons, now ACC championships and things are to be expected. And I do think that's the mindset behind what this coaching staff is doing. You know, they know that the expectations are going to get loftier now that they've had some success. And so they, if it means you have to lose a guy on occasion, then so be it. But you got to bring in the best players possible. And, you know, that's just, it's just part of football, unfortunately. But I hate to see Trayshawn go. But like I said, you know, now that you have depth at a position, it's going to happen on occasion. And that's, it's not a bad thing. It, you know, it sucks to watch the player leave, but the reasons behind it, you're happy about. Now to talk about the last thing I want to go on here is the two guys that they did bring in since we've last talked that I didn't get a chance to talk about, and that is obviously Braden Fisk from Western Michigan. Now, he was a 3-star coming out of high school, 4-star rated transfer player, number one defensive lineman in the portal, 6'5", 300 pounds, 5 seasons with 1,809 snaps of experience. Man, guys, these 2022 stats are ridiculous. He had 48 pressures last season. The highest for Florida State was Jared Verse at 36. He had 8 sacks last year, 54 tackles, 2 forced fumbles, PFF grade of 86.4, run defense grade of 83.8, and a pass rush grade of 80.3, all which are well above quality starter status. Now, of course, you're going to say, well, he was at Western Michigan. Who did he play? He did have 2 games this season. One was against Michigan State, against Power 5 competition. One against Michigan State, who, you know, they're not great. They fell off a little bit since they had that good run under Mel Tucker's first year. But, you know, they're probably about as good as you're going to face with your middle-of-the-road ACC teams. And he had a 78.7 PFF grade in that game. The Pitt game, they also played Pitt, who you're going to, you know, we play next year. And he had a 69.1 grade in that game as well. So he's been able to hold his own against Power 5 competition. And so I'm really excited about what he's able to bring to the table for the interior of this defensive line, somewhere where they needed help almost the most. Now, also the other player that they brought in, another number one player out of the portal, was Fenchel Cypress from UVA. 3-star player coming out of high school, 4-star transfer. Number one cornerback in the portal, 6 foot, 184 pounds, 4 seasons, 987 snaps of experience. In 2022, he only allowed a 45% completion percentage, had 9 PBUs, did not give up a touchdown, a PFF grade of 87.8, rush defense of 77.4, coverage grade of 87.6, had a very low missed tackle rate, and also a very good tackling grade. Versus Syracuse and Miami combined, he allowed 1 catch for 7 yards on 10 targets. So that's huge. I mean, this is a big get for Florida State in a position that they needed it, especially after some of the regression we saw from a few players in the secondary this year at the corner position. You know, Renardo was a great player, but, you know, some of the other guys just really kind of didn't have the year we expected. But, you know, Greedy Vance is another player that I like. You also got, like I said, Akeem Dent's coming back. You know, you have Jerrion Jones is coming back. You have Azaria Thomas, who's a talented young player. Shaheem Brown is also someone who's going to look to step into that safety role with Jamie Robinson with his departure. And I really like Shaheem. I think he's a good young player. He's got some experience now. Now personally, I wouldn't mind him seeing going to the portal to grab another safety just because of depth reasons. You don't really have a whole lot behind him. And depth is always one of my main concerns. Because sometimes when you have to shuffle the deck after you lose a guy, it just doesn't really translate how you want. So I wouldn't mind seeing him go there. But, you know, again, you just really have to trust the staff. Because when you look at some of the things in the past, you know, they had the shortcomings on the offensive line as far as depth. And they went out and they solved it. And that's something that, you know, they needed some receivers. They went out and got them. And so I think the staff knows who they have on the roster and what their capabilities are. And I think if they feel like, you know, Shaheem or whoever else is on the roster isn't really going to cut it for 2023 or what they're trying to do, or maybe he needs another year to develop, then they'll go out and find someone. But I do think at least you do have someone there that you feel good about. But overall, guys, that's pretty much going to wrap it up here. Just talking about the roster moves, the coaching changes, and wrapping up the bowl game. I do have some more shows coming up for you guys that I think you're going to like. We're going to do a way too early look at 2023 and just kind of talk about each position room group by group and kind of what they got coming back, what they're bringing in, what they could potentially still need, some of the biggest losses and stuff like that that you're going to have to replace. So be on the lookout for that. I also have the episode where I'm going to grade myself and see how I did covering Florida State, what I was right about, what I was wrong about, and things like that, because I do think it's important for everybody to go back and grade what you did, and so you can get better the next year. You know, hey, I'm trying to climb too, so I gotta, you know, you gotta keep yourself accountable for everything there. So we're gonna go back and look at that too, and I got some interesting stats and things for 2023 looking ahead. So with that being said, guys, it would be too much to run in this episode. We'd be 2 hours long, and I know you guys don't want to listen to me talk for 2 hours. One other thing for you to check out before we get out of here. I don't know if you guys have seen it or not. Most of you probably have. I made a little 2023 hype video for Florida State that I put out on New Year's Day. Something just kind of I put together over a couple days. And I really love like film editing and that whole process and whatnot. I really enjoy it. I'm still very new at it, so I'm still kind of finding my way. But it was just something that I put together that it actually turned out a lot better than I had planned on. And it's already over between Twitter and YouTube. It's already over 20,000 views in less than a week. And, you know, I when I watched it, I was like, okay, well, it gave me chill bumps. So I think it's good. I let my wife watch it. She's a Georgia fan. It gave her chill bumps too. So I really think you guys are going to enjoy it. Go check that out. It's on our YouTube channel. If you haven't checked that out, drop us a like and subscribe as well there too. And with that being said, guys, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up here. I do appreciate everything that you guys have done to support this Plant the Spear and this channel and this outlet in 2022 and to help us grow. I really appreciate it. I can't say thank you enough. And I just look forward to 2023, continuing to grow, continuing to, you know, build a family here at Plant the Spear. And you know, I always try and interact with you guys on social media and things like that. You know, I'm really active in the comment section and things like that. So again, I do appreciate everything, guys. And as always, go Noles.